Right?
Yes, that's fine. Were there many newly immigrated children in school with you?
No. Not particularly. They were mostly, and their parents were, but the kids that I grew up with were mostly born right here in the United States, mostly around Pittsburgh.
You had said that you went to Carnegie Mellon.
Yeah.
Carnegie Tech.
I did not graduate. War came on. When I came back, I had to go to work.
What year did you start? Do you remember?
Where?
At Carnegie Tech.
In 17 or 18.
And you studied electrical engineering.
That's right.
Tell us about what you did in the war.
Oh.
Besides getting an honorable discharge.
Well, that was very interesting. In the First World War, it was the first time that the Army became mechanized. Up until that time, they had horses and ponies, and they started with trucks. And some airplanes, not many, and they required people who had some mechanical background or some knowledge of electrical work. Well, I was away, and I came back, they were looking for me, the Army was looking for me, and I went out there, and I reported to the lieutenant, and the lieutenant says to me, where you been? And I told him I took a week's vacation before I went into the Army. And he said, well, he said, you're looking over my papers, and you're supposed to be in the instant repair. He said, but that's all filled up. You go over and make a blacksmith out of you. And I become a blacksmith.
It hasn't changed.
I mean, it was very interesting. We drilled. We drove, walked up and down with guns.
Where were you stationed?
Right here in Shenley Park. We marched up and drilled up and down Monument Hill. That's right. That's a big, wide space of grass right opposite Carnegie Mellon. And we had guns, and do with them. And one night they put me on guard duty. I guarded a couple of apartments. And a guy came in at night. He was the front. There's some French soldiers there, and I didn't know what to tell him. I said, "Get out of here. Go on. Keep on going." He had a uniform on, so I figured he was all right. He wasn't a spy. But it was very interesting.
Had you volunteered, or were you drafted?
No, I volunteered. I volunteered.
And did you ever go overseas?
No. I never left Pittsburgh.
Good. That's a way to fight a war.
Yeah.
What did you have to do as a blacksmith then?
Make, as I told you, that was the first that was when the Army became mechanized. Mm-hmm. We made hinges. We learned the little parts of the truck, the hinges and the hasps and the locks. And the fenders were made of real rigid iron, and you had to repair those. So it was the beginning of our so-called mechanized army today, with their tanks and their various guns and things of that kind.
Before we go further, I want to skip back. I didn't get any details about the Zionist organization that your father was so active in.
I would recommend that you read this article in that book.
Okay.
And you can incorporate that into it.
Okay.
We have been to Israel 3 times. We hope God spares us and keeps us well to go again.
That's wonderful.
I have a first cousin living in Tel Aviv who is the daughter of my father's brother. And we visit her. In fact, we write to her quite often. We send her a little bit of something in the envelope.
When your father came to this country, did his parents come also?
That I don't know. I don't know. I didn't know that he had parents. I know he had a father and mother, but who they were,
I never knew them. What was the medical care services like when you were a child? I mean, when your grandmother wasn't there to take care of you.
Well, there was a Dr. Haggerty who had an office on Wiley Avenue. He was more or less the whole family's doctor. And there were drugstores, of course, and well, we got along. We grew up somehow or another by hook or crook.
Your mother must have turned to your grandmother for advice.
Well, I guess so.
May I ask a question here? Did all of your sisters and brothers go to the same schools that you did, to the Grant School and Fifth Avenue?
Practically, except one brother went to the old Second Ward School where the morgue is now.
And what about college? Did they also go to college, or were you?
A couple of the boys went to Carnegie Mellon. Now, who they were, I don't know. That was, after all, I was. I'm the next. They, I'm number nine in the hit parade, so you can see.
Mm-hmm. No, I just wondered what the trend was. My oldest brother,
Harry, was mechanically inclined. In fact, the matter is, in here, I think there's an ad there. He was an electrical contractor then, in 1903. And we all the boys, went into the business.
When, with your father having died when you were so young, and you said you hadn't had much money, how was it possible to pay for college?
I don't know. I want to be truthful with you. I don't know.
Well, do you know what was done? Did you work before you started? Or?
Oh, yeah. I started to work when I was 16 years old. In fact, I used to spend my Saturdays and days off of school during the summer and worked in our business.
Your brother's business.
Oh, yes. I now own the business myself.
And what is the name?
Rayfield Electric Company.
Have you ever done anything else for a living besides the electric?
I wouldn't know how to do anything else. If they ever gave up,
be a blacksmith.
Well, I forgot how to do it now. If they ever quit making electricity and they have need for it, I wouldn't know what to do.
It's not going to happen. What were your main forms of fun and recreation when you were a kid, an adolescent?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I liked to play baseball. And there was what was known as the Brickyard, which was about two blocks from where we lived on Liberty Street. And they had kilns where they used to cook the bricks. And we as kids would play there. When I was missing, they would send one of my sisters up to find, you'll find them in the brickyard. And sure enough, there I was. Come home dirty, filthy, with all brick dust all over me. But that was it. Then I played basketball.
What position did you play in baseball?
Well, I was a pitcher, I think. You know, after all, when you're asking me questions that I'm supposed to remember from...
you're doing very well.
50, 60, 70 years ago.
And you play basketball right in the neighborhood.
Right in the neighborhood, at the old Irene Kaufman settlement.
Did you date much when you were an adolescent?
I played the field. Let me be really truthful with you. I didn't marry until I was 30.
This is a good spot. We'd like your full name.
Maiden name, Friedman. Sally, S-A-L-L-Y. Friedman, F-R-I-E-D-M-A-N.
And are you from Pittsburgh?
No.
Richmond, she Virginia. Heard about me.
Oh, tell her.
I'm going to tell this story for posterity. She heard about me. She's from Richmond.
Oh, come on, they don't want to waste
it. She heard, but this is important. I wanted to get it on the record. She heard about me, came up here and snatched me off. I was then living with my oldest sister, who was married and didn't have any children, and I was her pet boarder. And every Monday I'd come home, and they would give me the business. When are you going to get married? What I said. When I'm 30, see, and that's exactly what happened. Not a day before.
Have you had children?
Oh, yes. One daughter.
Would you give us her name?
Rachel.
Named after my mother.
Named after his mother.
No, her name is Rachel Louise. She took the name
she was born on the day that we had yard site for Bubby Khani's husband, and his grandfather, and his name was Lewis. Mm-hmm. So she's named after Mother Rayfield and Mother Rayfield's father, Rachel Louise.
And when was she born?
November 1930. November 1930. And she's married to Bernard Latterman. Do you know the one
I do. And do they have children?
They have two. They have a son, 24, and a daughter, 21. Well, she's going to be 22 soon.
And what are the children's names?
Anne, and his name is Jay David.
How old is Anne?
Anne's, she's 21. She'll be 22 in May.
She's a senior at IU in Athens. J. David Latterman is a graduate of Pitt.
Where did you live when you were first married?
Hobart Street.
And did you remain there very long?
No, we moved all over the place.
To different neighborhoods or within?
No, within the same area.
Within the same. The longest time we moved, we stayed at any one place, was at the Park Plaza. We were there for 14 years.
Yeah, well, that's just recent. Yeah,
that was the longest we stayed. Now, we can't move here. We bought this thing.
No.
Okay.
We have to stay.
We're stuck. That's the only one of the reasons why I bought it, because I knew we couldn't move from it.
Did you always live in Squirrel Hill?
Well, yes, yes. Well, we lived at the district apartments. We lived at Park Plaza. We lived on Hobart Street. We lived on Squirrel. We had a home on Squirrel Hill Avenue. Yeah. I mean, we lived right around. We're Jewish. We wanted to be around our own.
Where did the children go to school? Rachel, where did she go to school?
Oh, she went to...
she graduated from
Mount Mercy.
Mount Mercy, and then she went to Pitt.
She didn't go to... No, Anne went to Winston.
Anne went to Winchester.
Winchester.
Not Rachel.
Who was Anne?
My granddaughter.
Okay. I'm not taking notes.
Okay, no, I'm sorry.
We've talked about your occupation a little bit. What have you most enjoyed about it?
The challenge. Because there isn't one job we do that's the same as the last one. It's ever-challenging occupation.
Are there any specific jobs that you've been happiest with, specific buildings or that kind
of thing? Not particularly. We wired the original Montefiore Hospital on Center Avenue. We wired the original hospital on Fifth Avenue.
Are you working on the current?
No. I walked out of it for
political reasons. But
what about the East Liberty Presbyterian Church? Was it?
Yeah, we were at East Liberty Presbyterian Church.
There's a Jew.
There's a Jew.
It is a beautiful
building. Who did it for R.B. Miller?
Beautiful building.
Took 2.5 years. We, at the present time, just completed a large job in Erie, Pennsylvania, for coffins.
But the LST.
We'll get into that. And then we started a job in Greensburg for the coffins. Now, during the World War II, and I tell you this, this is quite interesting, I think. We secured a contract with the American Bridge Company for a shipyard down at Ambridge. We wired 128 LSTs. Now, an LST is a landing ship tank. We didn't know anything about wiring ships. This was an ocean-going vessel. I went down to, after I made my arrangements with a purchasing agent here in Pittsburgh, and he sent me down to the shipyard to talk to Commander Snyder. He looked at me and he said, Ray Feely, I'll ask you a question. Did you ever wire any ships? And I said, no, an ocean-going vessel. I says, there's never been any ocean-going vessels built in Pittsburgh, but I think we've done enough different kinds of that we can adapt ourselves to it. We were given an Army-Navy E, and it was repeated. We had 1,500 men working for us, 7 days a week. This young lady had the honor of christening one, LST 835. She cracked it up. That bottle of champagne over the bow of the boat, but it was a very interesting educational visit. I feel very proud of my. I received a very fine commendation from the U.S. Navy, and for our efforts in it. But I will never want to go through it again.
How did you go about getting the contract?
Well, there was a fellow named Dan Hammerschmidt. I don't know whether you know him or not, but he was the purchasing agent of the American Bridge Company. We knew him, and he knew us. Called us in one day and wanted to know if we'd be interested in this. And I said to my brother, well, I was in business with my brother, Benjamin, who passed away. We went in to see him, and I said to Dan, we'd be very, very, I figured that was the closest thing to actually doing something for the war effort that I could put my hands on. We did a terrific job. I'm really proud of that. In fact, the matter, even to this day, we didn't have 1,500 electricians. There aren't that many available. We had men who were pipe fitters, who were carpenters, who were lathers, all the various. We had two or three fellows working in the office who were playing the Pittsburgh Symphony, who were musicians. I mean, and we run a school, we developed them, and it was a very interesting operation. I don't know of anything that the finest thing that I ever did in my life. I look back on that as one of the outstanding jobs we did.
See, that's your contribution.
Yeah.
We still have a lot of time. What about your work with Franklin Federal?
Well, I was on the board for 7-8 years. I'm a life trustee of the Hebrew Free Loan. I am a life trustee of the Jewish Home for the Aged. I remember one week particularly, I was out every night at a different meeting. I came home Saturday, and Sally said to me, "How would you like to take me to a movie?" I was just too tired, too exhausted. I gave up two or three of these things. One of them was the Hebrew Freedom, because that was too tough.
Tell me what kind of work you did do with it.
What I did? Oh, I would sit on the board, and we passed on loans and made...
He didn't mean the... You mean the Hebrew Free Loan or Franklin?
No, I'm really more interested in this. Describe the organization for us.
Oh, well...
And then what your part was.
The organization, we first met in Sam Weiner's Reliable Bag and Trunk Company on the corner of 5th and Stevenson Street. It was a small group. It was a small organization. It wasn't a federal. It was just the Franklin Savings and Loan. Then it became federalized. That was during the Depression.
And so you were one of the founders?
Yes. Yes. And it grew. I was on the board longer than that. I know I was. It must have been 15, 16 years. But it was, I got to the point that I didn't want to go out and do things. Go to this meeting, that meeting. Tuesday nights, I went for 14, 15 years. Every Tuesday night I went to the Hebrew Free Loan. Tuesday night at 7:30, you were there.
Describe that. The Hebrew Free Loan.
Well, that is a story all of its own. When I first became acquainted with the Hebrew Free Loan, I got involved with Manny Spector. Did you know Manny Spector? Manny Spector, he was quite an individual. He would go out and he collected for the United Jewish Fund. He always say that, "What's on the bottom line? How much you're going to give?" Well, I worked with him on the United Jewish Fund. In fact, the matter is, one year when Charlie Rosenblum refused to take the chairmanship of it, walked out on us, Herman Feinberg, myself, and Jack Wolk, three of us, we took it over. We run the campaign. Didn't raise as much money as they raise now, but we raised. Well, after it was over.
What year was that?
Where's that book? They gave me an award of some kind. The Chronicle sent me a bunch of flowers. Oh, it was
back in there. Aren't things packed away? I don't know where to look for them.
Oh, don't worry
you
about
don't
it.
You don't really need that.
We can look it up in the Chronicles.
It was the Chronicle. It was the Outlook,
Chronicle. It was the Criterion.
The Criterion. That's
how far back
I'll
it goes.
It was before Rachel was married, and she's married, going to be 26 years.
Yeah.
So it has
around
to be,
yeah.
Right.
Well, they sent me a whole
around
man of the week,
man 48, 9, something like
man
that.
Man of the week or the man of the year or something like that. A beautiful bouquet of flowers. And I was quite active in the United Jewish Fund. I was on the board. I was on the executive committee. But as I'm getting a little older, I have the zip and pep to run out and go to meetings.
Mm-hmm.
You can understand that.
Well, the young mm-hmm. ones have to take over.
And the
time.
Younger ones,
yeah.
Young ones
like
are taking
are doing.
Over. Yeah, younger ones are taking over. I very seldom get down to the Hebrew Free Loan anymore, though I'm a life trustee, having served 12, 14 years as a director. Every Sunday morning I would be up 7 o'clock, go to the Jewish Home for the Aged, sat on the admissions committee, was chairman of the building committee.
He served his time.
I served.
But tell us a little about what you did with say Hebrew Free Loan.
Hebrew Free Loan was a very interesting occupation. We would meet every Tuesday night, and people would apply to us for loans. I'll never forget an experience. There was a woman came in, and her husband came in one night, Sidney Stark. Did you know of Sidney Stark? A very fine individual. She came in, and she wanted a loan of $100. What did you want the money for? She started, tears came to her eyes. Her daughter was going to get married. She needed the $100 to Stelchuppi to make the wedding. Well, she got that $100 so fast, she didn't know what happened to her. I'll never forget Sidney as long as I'm, and she thanked us. She was crying. And on the way out, he puts his hands in his pocket, pulls out a $50 bill and hands it to her, and that wasn't on the loan. She got her $100 quick. People who come to the Hebrew Free Loan, we also took care of many new Americans. Hebrew Free Loan is unique. It would take an hour to describe the work of the Hebrew Free Loan. There's no interest. There's no charge. All we tell them very nicely now, you want to borrow $200, $300. We also make student loans, too. $200, $300, $400, fine. Now, how much can you pay off each week? $5. We figure it out now. That'll take longer than a year. We'd like to have this money back in 1 year so that we can lend it to the next person. Our rate of losses are nil. Nil. And then we also have financed a couple shuls. We went out in Eastmont. They borrow money. That yeshivy down on Fifth Avenue, Yechachatinim or something like that. We give them money. But what they do, the individual people sign notes for it. But there's no interest charge. We have never sued anyone in 74 years of existence, and it's a very fine piece of work. I enjoyed every night I went down and sit there. You hear such stories. There was a peddler. I'll never forget him. He used to come down. He had an old automobile. He would come down on Fifth Avenue and buy some yard goods, some merchandise, and then go up on the hills in Mount Washington, Mount Lebanon, places like that, and sell it. One day he stopped to make a delivery and he parked his car and he came out. The car's brakes had failed and the car smashed up. He was out of business. So he come there and I sat on the loan committee that night. And he's telling us the story, and he's out of it. Well, we gave him $800-$900, bought him a new car, put him back in business.
And he was able to pay it off in a year?
Oh, sure. No, he didn't. We gave him an extension. That he didn't pay it off in a year, maybe 2 years. We didn't push. We never pushed him.
Where does the money come from?
Good. Mark Browarski. Family changed the name to Browar. He gave them $40,000-$50,000 in his will. Other people have contributed. Her mother, when she passed away, had one of the parts of it. I've given them some money, not much. But this built up to about $150,000 to $175,000, and it's a sort of revolving fund because it's paid back.
They don't solicit for funds from the general Jewish community.
Never solicit. You never hear.
It's a wonderful organization.
You never hear of the Hebrew Free Loan ever.
No fundraising.
No fundraising of any manner, shape, or form.
When did you first get involved with it?
Oh,
35, 40 years ago.
And what led you into it?
Nanny Spector grabbed me by the arm and said, "You've got to come, we need you." And I couldn't say no to Manny. Manny was a very persuasive sort of an individual.
Tell us a little bit about how you started to work with the Home for the Aged.
Well, I used to visit there with a fellow named Mendel Solomon, whose brother was in the home. And he was a very...